So while people are filing into the room, I did want to just point out a couple of things to your attention from the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta. I know many of you saw Partners Magazine, which is a publication that we send out across the district that addresses various community and economic development related issues. So we encourage you to peruse that magazine. And if you have ideas for the magazine or if you'd like to have additional information, let us know. We also have a podcast series that addresses a number of housing and economic development issues. So, in fact, the current feature is focusing on workforce and jobs. And I have some postcards up here for your information, and I'll have them at the back. So with that, it looks like we have whoever is going to be here is here, so we can move forward.
Very good.
Thank you.
All right. First of all, let me state that only registered speakers will deliver individual presentations. I will call each speaker following the order on the agenda, which you should all have. If someone is not available when your name is called or their name is called, we will move on to the next person on the list. And presenters should state their name, organization affiliation, if any. And each individual presenter will have up to 3 minutes to present. The timekeeper, who has moved, will indicate when the presenter has 1 minute left. And when time is up, and again, I would please remind you that these proceedings are being recorded, if you would speak into the microphone. So we will start with Georgia State Senator Vincent Fort. Okay. Private citizen Vatrice Farrell. Housing, education, and economic development. Charles Harris, Executive Director. There we go.
Good afternoon. I'm Charles Harris, President and CEO of Housing, Education, and Economic Development in Jackson, Mississippi. And I'm also here to represent the National Community Reinvestment Coalition, known as the CRA. I'm honored to participate today in this public hearing on the Community Reinvestment Act regulation. CRA requires safe and sound lending and would have been a preventive cure to the foreclosure crisis had it covered a broader range of institutions. As a beneficiary of the CRA has been, the following reform, among others, must be implemented in order for CRA to realize its full potential. Number one, assessment area of the geographical area on CRA exam must cover the great majority of banks' loans. Currently, 25% of all home purchase loans are made by banks operating their assessment areas. Research has shown that banks' loans outside assessment areas are more likely to be high-cost loans than loans in assessment areas and scrutinized by the CRA exam. Currently, banks have the option of including their non-depository affiliates on CRA exam. They will opt against inclusion if the affiliate engage in risky lending on discriminatory lending. Banks must be required to include their affiliate on the CRA exam. Number three, a large body of research concluded that minorities receive more high-cost risk lending that would justify based on their credit worthiness. If CRA consider lending in service to minorities, racial disparity in lending will be reduced. Number four, by holding lenders accountable, public available data, particularly the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act, has been vital for increasing responsible lending to traditional underserved borrowers. Applying a similar rationale, the limited CRA small business data must be enhanced to include the race, gender of the small business borrower. In addition, the agency must require census tract level disclosure of community development loans and investments. Likewise, data on the types of consumer lending by borrowers, demographic and census tract can promote access to affordable consumer loans an alternative to abusive payday loans. To improve access to credit is to improve the CRA. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Redfields to Greenfields, Atlanta, Chief Executive Officer Laura Hughes. Welcome.
My name's Laura Hughes, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Redfields to Greenfields. We, meaning Redfields to Greenfields America, support expanding the Community Reinvestment Act regulations to encourage banking institutions to invest in neighborhood stabilization programs. However, these projects should not be restricted to a narrow interpretation of redevelopment. The nation has too much development. There are at least 5 million excess homes, retail vacant space totals over 10%, and is rising rapidly due to the growth of internet shopping, and many industrial facilities are surplus due to global changes in production and just-in-time delivery. The problem is nationwide. It is not confined to older, shrinking cities such as Detroit, and is serious even in growth cities such as Atlanta. At 3.18%, Atlanta's home foreclosure rate is slightly above the national rate, and 10.51% of mortgages here are delinquent. Atlanta's retail vacancy rate is 12% and climbing. It could get much worse as shoppers migrate to the internet. The national office vacancy rate is as high as 14.8%, but Atlanta's is even higher at 21.2%. There are 12.3 million square feet vacant in Buckhead, Midtown, and downtown Atlanta combined, or 12 empty Bank of America towers. These residential and commercial vacancies are costly to communities, banks, and nearby landowners. The property values and other interests of the surrounding community are often best served if an abandoned or foreclosed property is temporarily removed from the market. Rather than redevelop where it may produce more vacancies, we should encourage the stabilization of neighborhoods by demolishing excess properties and converting the land into a combination of parks and land banked for future development when economic conditions improve. Banks should be given CRA credit for investment in this type of redevelopment as well. We note that the projections of many developments frequently turn out to be too optimistic, and the developed property ultimately produces negative cash returns, hurting banks. In addition, investment in parkland and land banks is generally disadvantaged, despite its positive effects on nearby properties, primarily because it does not project positive near-term cash flow. Finally, the federal government should incent bank loans for parks, recreation, and land bank projects by setting up a program to purchase such loans from banks when they are originated at a 0% interest rate and on a principal-only amortization schedule. These measures would allow longer-term investment by local governments, nonprofits, and community shareholders, as well as public-private partnerships with corporations and developers. The combination of these incentives would encourage green and sustainable land use that is in the best interest of many communities and have been affected by past real estate excesses.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Georgia State Senate Senator Vincent Fort, I understand, has arrived. He's coming in. Expert Financial Systems, LLC, Ed Kenny, Chief Executive Officer. Welcome.
My name is Ed Kenny. I am the CEO of Expert Financial Systems here in Atlanta. I'm here today to talk about prepaid debit card issuance and how that can fit in with the CRA. The underserved, underbanked communities, while traditionally thought of as rural and lower-income neighborhoods, may not be practically served with brick-and-mortar branches. However, readily accessible convenience or general merchandise retail establishments may be rapidly and economically utilized to become remote deposit capture, or account servicing locations. For example, there's advancements in kiosk technology with web conference attendance, cash acceptors, bill payment, and check cashing. These are all now on the horizon, further making this type of branchless banking even more accessible. This is especially true for rural areas where building a branch may be cost prohibitive. Community or potential bank account market segments needs readily to assess the payment and savings devices and methods. So if we look at what a community is, it may not necessarily be a geographic area if you can distribute card products and services without respect to a specific geographic location. It could be down, you know, a chain of convenience stores that could be spread across the country. As described in current CRA regulations for bank servicing military personnel, the assessment area may be defined as the entire bank customer base, which is, in essence, abandons assessment areas altogether. Therefore, similarly and diverse geographically unbound groups of bank deposit customers could be considered a community. Examples of such unbound communities are affinity groups, memberships, and employee groups. Development of banking services to these unbound communities is accomplished with remote deposit capture and branchless banking of prepaid debit card issuance. These debit products and services can be treated as paperless now accounts. The framework is well established there, with account holders being acquired via branchless banking. The account deposits are made by traditional direct deposit and other ACH mechanisms and via cash account servicing at the RDC locations. The account holders have access to online and telephonic banking services, including account management, bill payment, historical data, funds movement, and purchase of additional banking services such as insurance, CDs, micro loan programs, or similar other overdraft protections offered at competitive rates. These can be designed to add value to the account holders that can qualify for the loans. While most of these concepts are not new, what may be required for scoring of CRA is low to no cost account holder value propositions. In today's marketplace of prepaid debit cards, what is typically found are monthly and transaction fees that can cost the account holders over $5 per month. Often there are ATM withdrawal fees of over $2, which do not include surcharges. Today, the main reason higher fees are found on reloadable prepaid card products is the legacy pricing models that have only yet begun to evolve. 10 years ago, when prepaid debit card products first emerged in the marketplace, these products were designed primarily by marketing entrepreneurs and not banks. So what developed was a system where the marketing companies became card program managers for the card issuer banks. Banks developed a wholesale pricing scheme for the program managers that is found today as a near uniform design across a few participating institutions and has yet been met with competitive forces to compel reduced rates to the cardholders.
Mr. Kenny, if I could get you to wrap up.
Yes, I'm right there. A streamlined issuance process with less layered production costs coupled with feature-rich account delivery at remote locations can provide these banking services. And the idea would be to streamline or stream the transactions to these banks, community banks at large, not just a few larger institutions, so that they can afford their communities the ability to issue cards.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
All right, Georgia State Senator Vincent Fort.
Good afternoon. My name is Vincent Fort. I serve in the Georgia State Senate 39th District, which goes from the south side of Atlanta to North Atlanta. As a matter of fact, you're sitting in my senatorial district right now.
And we're happy to be here, sir.
Glad to have you. I'd like to talk today about the Community Reinvestment Act in the context of what we have experienced here in Atlanta with regard to banks' involvement in the subprime mortgage lending business. Here's what we've experienced. One, the evolution in the rise of the destructive, abusive, predatory subprime mortgage lending business in Atlanta from the early 90s until today. Two, which despite the massive community response we in Atlanta and Georgia undertook to stop it, dramatically expanded through the 90s and the early 2000s, devastating many of our inner city, mostly minority homeowners and communities, many of whom are in my district, who have been and still are being extremely hard hit by an ever-increasing volume of foreclosures as a direct result of the decade-long practice of making completely unaffordable loans to homeowners in order to satisfy Wall Street's demand for mortgages to fill its subprime mortgage-backed security pools. Three, the major national banks have played the role that the major national banks have played in this ruinous expansion of predatory lending. And four, the utter failure of the federal regulators charged with the overseeing of national banks to address the bank's role in this disaster in any constructive way. And there were constructive ways that could have been employed to deter the bank's disastrous involvement, particularly with regard to the enforcement of the Community Reinvestment Act. We have a lot of history here in Atlanta and in Georgia with legislation regarding predatory lending. I'm sure that y'all are somewhat familiar with it. It's been written about in a chapter in this book, Broke USA, and I commend that to you. I will not go into all of the details of what happened here in Georgia, except to say that we passed the strongest anti-predatory lending law in the country, and it was undone just a few months after it was put into place with the collaboration, unfortunately, of the national banks, federal regulators, including the OCC, rating agencies, and other financial institutions. In 2003, under a flurry of intense lobbying and a blizzard of activity, the Georgia Fair Lending Act was gutted, with many of its strongest provisions removed or substantially weakened. National banks descended on Georgia, on the Georgia Capitol, to do everything possible to weaken or eliminate this law. My time is up.
Please go ahead and move to your...
Yeah. Well, there are two things that I want to, and I'll pass on my revised comments to you later, but there are two things that I wanted to ask this body to consider. One is making those predatory lending practices part of the evaluation and assessment in the Community Reinvestment Act. If that had been done, 10 years ago, the devastation of many of the neighborhoods that I represent would not have occurred. We need the federal regulators to watch out for consumers, watch out for homeowners, not facilitate what has happened in these neighborhoods. And two, I want to ask you to take into consideration one very specific thing. We have organized here in Atlanta the Atlanta Fighting Foreclosure Coalition over the last 2 years. The Atlanta Fighting Foreclosure Coalition is made up of the faith community, civil rights community, consumer attorneys, and one of the things that we have focused on in our discussions with banks, in particular with Wachovia, Wells Fargo, and with Bank of America, and unfortunately Bank of America has not been as responsive as we would like them to have been, but in these discussions with Wachovia, Wells Fargo, we have asked them to do real, viable, sustained loan modifications. It seems to me that when we take into consideration the devastation that the subprime predatory loans have wrought on the communities in places like Atlanta, that these banks have a responsibility to do viable, sustained loan modifications, which include writing down the principal balance, which includes not only trial modifications, but permanent modifications to keep people in their homes, that these banks have a responsibility for what they have done to do loan modifications, and that loan modifications should be a specific criteria that CRA compliance is based on. So those are my two points today. One, that the predatory lending practices ought to be made as a criteria And two, that loan modification should be a criteria in CRA compliance. Without these things being implemented, I'm very skeptical that we can protect the neighborhoods that I represent and many like it. And I'll close by saying I was, in the last couple of weeks, I've been particularly distressed by what I've read about the money laundering that has gone on in Wachovia, Wells Fargo, over the last 5 to 6 years. We are faced with, on the one hand, people being put in bad predatory loans, oftentimes in Wachovia branches. These are not bought mortgages, but mortgages that are made in the bank. And at the same time, Wachovia, Wells Fargo, looking the other way when drug money, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of drug money are laundered through their banks. It seems to me that that is something that CRA ought to take into consideration as well. The violation of criminal statutes is something that banks ought to be held accountable for within the CRA process. Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Jenna Roscoe, Senior Vice President, Chief of Government Relations and Public Policy for Operation Hope.
I, Jenna Roscoe, am happy to address you today on behalf of Operation Hope. Operation Hope is a nonprofit public benefit organization founded immediately after the civil unrest in 1992 by our chairman and CEO, John Hope Bryant. Currently, Ambassador Andrew Young serves as our global spokesperson, and Quincy Jones serves as the co-chair of our 5 Million Kids Initiative to deal with the dropout prevention initiative nationwide. I'm here today to address the topic of access to banking services. According to the July 20th, 2010 Pew report entitled Unbanked by Choice, a look at how low-income Los Angeles households manage their money that they earned, half of low-income families in Greater Los Angeles turn to costly and unregulated alternative financial services rather than banks to meet their monetary needs. The study found that one-third of the unbanked conduct all transactions in cash, leaving them open to theft, fraud, and loss. This is a troubling study that offers an opportunity for modernizing the regulations upon implementing CRA. How should access to financial services be considered under CRA? CRA should require financial institutions to provide every adult American with access to an electronic debit card accessible depository account protected by the FDIC and NCUA. According to the FDIC's Alliance for Economic Inclusion, there are estimated 28 million Americans that are unbanked and 44.7 million are underbanked. The lack of a bank account can be a devastating effect. Operation Hope witnessed this through its Project Hope initiative in the Gulf Coast through our Hope Coalition America program in 2005. Thousands of Hurricane Katrina victims and victims of other natural disasters were unable to make payments from FEMA because they did not have a bank account to which funds could be wired. Operation Hope has successfully educated over 1 million Americans around financial literacy and economic empowerment. Should agencies revise CRA to include additional regulatory incentives to provide access for services for historically underserved and distressed areas, CRA should require financial institutions to create programs for historically underserved and distressed populations. On April 7th, Operation Hope in Atlanta announced and broke ground on its Financial Literacy Empowerment Center at Ebenezer Baptist Church. We are working with the Financial Service Roundtable and FDIC, insured banks, and other financial service institutions to help convert check cashing customers into banking customers, renters into homeowners, small business dreamers into small business owners and entrepreneurs. Access to a bank account or relationship with a financial institution should be available to every American citizen, and financial institutions should create specific programs for historically underserved, underbanked, and distressed populations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dana Boole, President and Chief Executive Officer, Community Affordable Housing Equity Corporation and the National Association of State and Local Equity Funds.
Welcome. Thank you very much. So my name is Dana Boole, President and CEO of Community Affordable Housing. We are a nonprofit located in Raleigh, North Carolina, which raises equity capital for investment in rental affordable housing using the low-income housing tax credit program. I'm also incoming president of NASLF, which is the National Association of State and Local Equity Funds. So similar to KHIC, we are managing roughly $7 billion of investor capital that is invested in roughly 100,000 units in 35 states. So that's the perspective that we're looking at. A considerable portion of the capital we raise is from banks that are incentivized to invest in housing for two basic reasons. They earn a competitive rate of return, and they're able to satisfy the investment test of the CRA. At the outset, the CRA is absolutely essential for the continued operation of the LIHTC program as an effective and critically important inducement for bank investment. Our issue is not with the effectiveness of CRA as a catalyst for investment, but rather the distortion that CRA creates as to the geographic location of such investment. We believe that CRA has the unintended consequence of steering bank investment in LIHTC properties frequently away from rural and smaller markets and toward the larger metropolitan areas, and echoing what a lot of the panelists have covered throughout the day. This is a particular concern to NASLF members who frequently expend a lot of their capital in non-urban markets throughout the country. Specifically, Section 12-7 of the interagency Q&A regarding community investment discusses an institution's community development activities. We endorse the objective of this language, but believe the challenge resides with its implementation. Based on our experience, we continually see that bank examiners are not consistent in the interpretation of this language. We recommend modifying the language to provide that an institution that has been determined on its last exam to have adequately addressed the community development needs of its assessment area will receive full credit for community development activities that benefit geographic areas located somewhere within the broader statewide area, as the reg shares, and in many cases, regional areas that includes the institution's assessment area, even if those activities do not benefit its assessment area. So really looking at the waterfall of taking care of the assessment areas first, allowing them to expand throughout the balance of the state, which is directly going to address a lot of the rural concerns that we have expressed today, and then lastly, in some instances, to go beyond those borders. All NASLF members prefer to limit the concept to investment in areas outside the assessment area but within the same state. Similarly, there are NASLF members who are also comfortable applying this more broadly to investment in areas within the same region, using the example I just shared. Alternatively, this proposal could be structured more narrowly to apply only to LIHTC investments rather than to all community development activities that benefit a broader area. We believe this more limited approach for LIHTC investments would be consistent with the purpose of CRA, which is to ensure that banks serve lower-income, traditionally underserved populations, which in the areas that they do business. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Charles Malloy, Executive Director, Community Development Corporation of Marlboro County. Welcome.
Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity for being this year.
Often in my community, they ask me, what hat are you wearing today? So you have my outline. So let me kind of share with you. My name is Charles Malloy. I am the Executive Director of the Community Development Corporation of Marlboro County. I'm a member of the Sacramento Association of CDCs, headed by Mr. Bernie Mazzeek. I'm also a member of National Community Reinvestment Coalition, Mr. John Taylor,
And I happen to be the chairman of the Social Concern Committee of the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church, South Atlantic Episcopal Area, which also covers Atlanta and South Carolina, where I'm from. And I'm a rural person, so I have all of these that I come to share with you. I assure you today that I'm probably like everybody has already said what I was going to say. So whatever I'm going to say it fast. And so, therefore, you won't miss too much by me speaking fast. The CDC of Marble County is a 501c3 organization that provides service to a 5-county area in northeastern South Carolina, which is the PD region, which is part of the region of the PD Bank. And we are one of the lowest, with highest employment, lowest per capita income within our state. And our state, as you know, South Carolina is probably the lowest in almost everything that is good. We provide pre, post-home counseling and foreclosure counseling for our constituency. We also asset building through the IDA program, which is the first-time home buyers, education, and small business development. The lack of enforcement of CRA requirements has led to predatory-like interest rates in several of our constituencies. For example, we have a client had an interest rate of about 11.5%, plus it was an ARM. The payment started at about $426 per month, which was affordable, and now has elevated to $575 per month. And with another elevation scheduled in 1.5 years, today she's in our foreclosure counseling and attempted a loan modification. And I would say the lender is not very cooperative. My community requests that CRA regulations be enforced. It may not have prevented everything that has happened, but I think we would be better off. Expand the requirement that all financial institutions be included in the CRA guidelines. And that's included all banks, mortgage, and others. That financial institutions declare their relationship with other institutions. I think one of the problems, we wouldn't have peritoneal lending. Do I get another 3 minutes?
Yeah.
Do I get another 3 minutes?
Just wrap it up if you would.
My time is already up?
Yeah. Finish up. Be good.
Okay. Thank you for the interruption. Reduce or eliminate exemption from data reporting for banks and non-banks. And that's who loans are made to. That's HMDA data is designed to do that because it does not carry all the data that's necessary. Reduce or eliminate exemption for reporting loans where a lender does not have a branch or in a non-metropolitan area. I share with you today that this organization has not had a foreclosure to date on any loan that we have provided counseling and our financial assistance to. We've been in business for about 7 years, and we're a rural area, probably about 20-some loans or 30 loans in that neighborhood. Therefore, we believe that if CRA regulation has been enforced and with proper pre and post counseling, that we would not have the financial crisis that we are facing today and in the future around mortgage lending. And I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, sir.
For the extra minutes. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Janice Mathis, Vice President, Rainbow Push Coalition.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Offer a few thoughts about proposed regulation implementing the Community Reinvestment Act. Rainbow Push, with our 300,000 members and chapters all over the country, encounter CRA in a variety of ways, but I want to limit my comments today to just two of those. The first involves a category of members we call Trade Bureau members. They are primarily disadvantaged business owners. They operate mostly in urban areas throughout the country, Chicago, Atlanta, New York, Washington, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Houston, and New Orleans. And these members are almost exclusively minority business enterprises. Over the past 10 years, I've worked here in Atlanta to try to help them grow and sustain their businesses. And there is the most intractable, insoluble problem in obtaining credit right here in Atlanta. I know we have problems in the rural areas, but it is the number one issue that they face all the time. And it is not just marginal firms. They, all of the members of the Black Enterprise 100 are also members of Rainbow Push Coalition's Trade Bureau. And my job is to help level that playing field and create opportunity for them. Finding credit is the number one issue that they face. And I've heard people talk about community reinvestment, community development. Many of these underserved communities want to be developed, but they want to do it in an organic way, the way every other community does it, by creating business enterprises that are indigenous to those communities, that create jobs that are sustainable and hire the people who live in those communities. And that's a tough job. Like the canary in the mine, when credit started to dry up for everybody, credit disappeared in minority communities. And so they are left with virtually no bank credit. Prior to the economic recession, such credit as was available to these firms required extraordinary documentation. You're talking about putting up your home, personal guarantees. And these are some, if I named them, you would recognize their names because they're some of the most profitable, long-standing African-American-owned businesses in this city have to go to New York and California to get capital in order to expand. And then I looked at just a cursory review of the CRA ratings between 2004 and 2010. Only 63 banks across the nation received a rating of needs to improve or substantial noncompliance. One was in Florida, four were in Texas, and six were in the Deep South, what I call my region, the Carolinas, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee. That ratings and reviews are inconsistent with what I hear and see every day, that credit scarcity is consistently seen and heard over the past decade. And I would encourage you regulators to take action to strengthen the rating system to more heavily weight the extension of credit to disadvantaged business enterprises. The other issue that I want to touch on briefly with my esteemed friend who's left the room, Senator Fort, he and I have been involved in a lot of public discussion about foreclosure, and Atlanta's been hard hit like many other areas of the country. He is right. The major banks have not made enough sustainable, high-quality loan modifications. But when you compare, when I compare my experience, and we work with hundreds of families over the last 2 or 3 years, the rate at which banks covered by CRA are willing to do a sustainable modification far outstrips institutions that are not covered by CRA. So I would echo the comments of those who earlier today said we want to see more institutions covered by CRA because we think that will make them more responsive to the communities that they are designed to serve. Well, thank you. We've got lots more we can say, but I'll leave it right there. Appreciate the opportunity.
You. President David, or David Young, president of the Georgia Affordable Housing Corporation.
Thank you, but I have no aspirations for being president. Appreciate that, though. My name is David Young. I'm president of the Georgia Affordable Housing Corporation, and I'm also here representing as a board member of the Georgia State Trade Association of Nonprofit Developers. The Georgia Affordable Housing Corporation is a nonprofit organization that was established in 1998 to advance affordable housing initiatives in low and moderate income households across the state of Georgia. GHC serves as a loan originator, closing agent, and servicer in its role as an intermediary and servicer for its current 22 member financial institutions and funders here in Georgia. We were created primarily to find CRA opportunities for community banks and financial institutions across Georgia. Currently, both of our organizations, both GHC and GSTAND, have always been active for about 10 years now, actively concerned about the access of capital in low and moderate income areas, both rural and underserved low and moderate income areas across the state of Georgia. And currently, we are even more concerned because of the economic and banking crisis in which a number of banks in Georgia have failed, as well as secondary market sources have dried up
for affordable housing opportunities in these markets. This restriction of capital in the low and moderate income sector is one reason why we support the continued broadening of amending guidelines for CRA. We recognize that, but there must be some type of balance between how much additional detail and regulations is added to the program, but as well a governing qualitative standard in terms of evaluating how banks or other financial institutions continue to perform going forward. In support of continuing the use of CRA and further improving the flow of capital in rural and underserved markets, we submit the following recommendations or comments. First, we feel that current CRA regulations should be amended for bank holding companies to ensure that CRA activities are conducted consistently across the geographic footprint and throughout all of their subsidiaries and affiliates, not just an emphasis on what's going on at the headquarters location of the organization or in that headquarters state. Second, we seek clarification regarding the definition of assessment areas so as to prevent a lack of incentive to invest in rural and underserved markets that may not be included under the traditional full-scope CRA exam. Next, we would like to see that CRA retains as a primary purpose the expansion of low and moderate income capital, which we can't say enough, and you've probably heard enough today, but especially in for households who are located in rural and underserved markets. They've been suffering for years and only have been further impacted by the current crisis. We would like to see that there is more of a qualitative assessment in these markets. Especially when considering that a 20-unit impact can have substantial, a 20-unit project can have a substantial impact in that market versus a quantitative guideline that might not include that particular project in it. My time is up. I understand that. But, again, we support the continued use of an effective CRA program, a balanced program that is not add so much additional rules and regulations to the program, but that incorporates a qualitative component that banks can use in those local markets, especially in rural and underserved markets, to ensure that those banks are looking at focusing on the needs of those who are seeking out to help the low and moderate income in those areas.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
And finally, Hyung Hughley, President and Chief Executive Officer, Resources for Residents and Communities. And I hope I pronounced your last name correctly, sir.
You did.
All right, good.
Thank you. It's been interesting being here today. My name is Hyung Hughley. I'm CEO of Resources for Residents and Communities of Georgia. And we started out as a neighborhood-based organization working in the Reynoldstown community. And we expanded our scope of services 5 years ago. Our business lines are home ownership counseling, affordable housing, community building, and multifamily development. But I sit on the board of AHAN, the Atlanta Housing Association of Neighborhood-Based Developers, as well as a member of GSTAN, the trade association that David talked about. And I'm also on the board of ANDP, Atlanta Neighborhood Development Partnership. But my heart is around community stabilization. And because of what has happened to this country in terms of the economy and the subprime lending and the fraudulent practices, our communities are really unstable, and we really need to look at that, the community stabilization piece. And I feel for the next 3 to 5 years, there needs to be a focus on that, and CRA needs to emphasize that focus around stabilization of communities. Banks are selling homes to investors because they want to get rid of the properties that are foreclosed. I think we need to look at some way in those bulk sales to get community development corporations in partnership with those investors who buy those homes so we can get them back on tax rolls and get people in those homes. That's one of the concerns I have. The other one is property values have been tremendously impacted by this these circumstances, and appraisals are really skewed. And they're skewed mainly because of, once again, no-doc loans and fraudulent practices by investors. we need to look at those property values some way in terms of appraisals and take out the junk so that we can get to some type of normalized appraisal value of properties so that our neighborhoods can come back. And we need to encourage partnerships with the banks in terms of investing more in home ownership counseling, pre- and post-purchase counseling. And we need to help, the banks need to really do a marketing campaign encouraging everybody to take home ownership counseling, because we know that people who do home ownership counseling are less likely to end up in crazy products. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Appreciate it.
I'll try one last time. Beatrice Farrell? No? All right. I'd like to remind everybody that a transcript of this entire hearing will be available shortly on the OTS website, which I believe is www.ots.treas.gov. The hearing has been recorded, and an audio recording will also be posted to that same website. And any interested persons, including panelists and individual presenters, may also submit written statements for the record in addition to what they have already provided, if any. And the deadline for submitting those written statements is August 31, 2010. Finally, I'd like to extend my thanks to all the participants for the unique perspectives and recommendations. We've gleaned important insights today that will prove very helpful in shaping the future of the CRA. I also want to thank OTS and the Federal Reserve Board staff for organizing this hearing. Our next hearing is set for Thursday, August 12, in Chicago, Illinois, and it has been organized by our colleagues at the Federal Reserve Board. That hearing will focus on topics that matter to many stakeholders, such as geographic coverage and affiliate activities. I look forward to the event and wish everyone a good evening and safe travels home. Thank you. Do you want anything else?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you all very much.